You're about to see a painting that caused a sensation when it was first unveiled at the Royal Academy in the mid-19th century. The Death of Chatterton, as it became known, was a pre-Raphaelite painter Henry Wallace's masterpiece. Created in 1856, it was Wallace's earliest and most celebrated work, and it took the art world by storm, capturing the Victorian imagination in a way like no other. It toured the country, often displayed on its own in a darkened room, and was seen by over a million visitors. It was phenomenally popular. The Chatterton painting became a defining icon of the Romantic era, and would go on to inspire generations of poets, writers, and artists. And it's a powerful, beautiful, and devastating piece. A picture of youthful suicide, rendered in exquisite narrative detail. From the panoramic city views stretching out beyond the window, St Paul's Cathedral silhouetted, to the torn-up writing spilling from the open case, and Chatterton's flaming red shock of hair. The richly coloured clothes hint that this was a man of aspirations, but are at odds with the dilapidated setting. The bare floor, spare furnishings, weathered window and cracked, crumbling walls. Look closer still and more symbolic features reveal themselves. A delicate wisp of smoke rising from a just extinguished candle flame on a table in the background. A single fragile flower reaching towards the light has wilted on the windowsill, dropping its petals forlornly. But stealing the show front and centre is the vial of poison, which has fallen into the foreground from Chatterton's outstretched arm, the packet still clasped in his hand. Henry Wallace's technique is masterful. He achieved the extraordinarily vivid colours that look as though they could have been painted just yesterday by using a white background under his paint rather than the usual duller canvas wash. The piece is so luminous it almost appears backlit. Wallace was remarkably adept at chiaroscuro, the play of light on contrast, accentuating the model's features in stark relief. Chatterton is pale, wan, and dead, in the most idealised, elegant, artful of fashions. Inscribed into the frame is a quote from Christopher Marlowe's Tragedy of Dr. Faustus. Cut is a branch that might have grown full straight, and burned is Apollo's laurel bough. The Victorian art critic John Ruskin described this picture as faultless and wonderful in every way. It is also morbid, tragic, and desperate. It speaks of a prodigious young talent extinguished by a cruel world, impoverished, driven to madness, and overcome by suffering, choosing to make the final sacrifice. He is the ultimate romantic hero. Or is he? The subject is the Bristol-born 18th century poet Thomas Chatterton, who died by his own hand at just 17 years of age, alone in his London lodgings, only 4 months after moving to the city. Chatterton had gone to London for the same reasons many young people do today, in search of better work, opportunity, to make a name for himself and escape his past. But on the 24th of August 1770, Chatterton was discovered in his room with a cocktail of arsenic and opioids, leading to the conclusion that this precocious young poet committed suicide. In death, a legend was born, and it spread rapidly, turning Chatterton into a martyr to his art, the poster boy of doomed poets. His tragic tale appealed so much to the romantic artistic movement sweeping Europe, and the particularly macabre curiosity of the Victorians, that the truth of it mattered little. It is Wallace's painting that is largely responsible for Chatterton's extraordinary legacy, albeit not one Chatterton would have chosen for himself. This exaggerated depiction of anguish eclipsed an extraordinary life and talent. In life, Chatterton was a poet of outstanding skill, writing mature verse from the age of 11. He was from the humblest of beginnings, the son of a widowed seamstress with little formal education, but a true genius emerged. Chatterton created over 700 works in his short life, spanning ballads, satires, love poems, anti-slavery poems, descriptive verse, eulogies, political diatribes, and bawdy doggerel. Neglected in his lifetime, It was the next generation of poets that came to appreciate his immense originality and innovation. Chesterton became enormously influential to other poets for both the beauty of his language and his pioneering technique. William Blake, Lord Byron, and Oscar Wilde admired him. Wordsworth called him the marvellous boy who excelled in every species of composition. Keats called him the purest writer in the English language and dedicated a sonnet to Chesterton. Dante Gabriel Rossetti said he was absolutely miraculous and the true dayspring of romantic poetry. And Samuel Taylor Coleridge's Kubla Khan was inspired by Chatterton's African Eclogue, from which the title of this exhibition is taken. But Chatterton's best-known work was the Rowley poems, and they were also his greatest torment. Growing up, Chatterton spent a lot of time in St. Mary Redcliffe Church, which was opposite his home. And it was in the muniments room that he claimed to have discovered ancient manuscripts written by a medieval monk named Thomas Rowley. Inspired by the magnificent architecture of St. Mary's, Chatterton retreated into an imaginary Gothic fantasy world as a distraction from an unsatisfactory existence as an apprentice legal scrivener. He invented an alter ego who led an idealised, innocent existence far from the mercenary Bristol that Chatterton detested. Thomas Rowley was supposedly a friend of the real-life merchant William Canning, who is buried in St. Mary Redcliffe. In fact, Rowley was a figment of the imagination, and Chatterton had written all the poems himself. An excerpt from one of them, Song from Ella, can be seen on the gallery wall as you leave. Chatterton had independently studied Shakespeare, Chaucer and Dryden, and wrote in a way that was unaffected by passing fashions. The Rowley poems were in a convincing medieval style, written in archaic lettering and on cleverly aged parchment. They fooled the intellectual establishment, and their authenticity was long debated. The Earl, antiquarian, and author of the first Gothic novel, Horace Walpole, was all set to publish the Rowley poems, something Chatterton had eagerly desired. But Walpole grew suspicious and eventually dismissed Chatterton after he confessed of his youth and low social status. Chatterton had thought Walpole a kindred spirit. Walpole had also claimed a work of his own, Castle of Otranto, was a translation from a non-existent ancient Italian manuscript. Chatterton was so hurt by his rejection, and angered at the extent to which his humble origins disadvantaged him, it prompted him to write a deeply ironic mock last will and testament, as a way of escaping his employment, leaving Bristol and moving to London, putting the Rowley poems behind him. An excerpt from this will that refers directly to Thomas Rowley can be seen on the far wall of the gallery. In London, Chatterton turned his pen to political journalism. He was a fierce critic of government policy and successfully captured the zeitgeist of the time. He wrote under various pen names, including Harry Wildfire, Vamp and Decimus. London editors couldn't get enough, and in the space of a few months, Chatterton had sold over 30 articles to the press. His work was being published, and his career was on the up. Though by no means wealthy, he wasn't in abject poverty either. Chatterton was comfortable in London, and finding it a vast improvement to Bristol. The then Lord Mayor of London, William Beckford, had promised to back Chatterton, and an endorsement was about to appear in print. But in an unfortunate turn of events, Beckford died 2 days before it was published. Soon after, the government began taking steps to curtail the freedom of the press. Chatterton, as a complete outsider, was no stranger to obstacles thrown in his path and remained determined to find fame and recognition. Politics was not his only project. He was also writing burlesque plays and an operetta. But just a short time later, Chatterton was found dead. The more plausible explanation for his death is now considered to be from an accidental overdose rather than suicide. Chatterton had been self-medicating with laudanum, a powdered opiate, together with arsenic, in an attempt to relieve the foul disease, or as we know it today, an STD. He inadvertently, fatally, mixed up the doses. However, the suicide story was so beguiling to the Romantic era that Chatterton came to personify it. This painting became more famous than the poet it depicts, and the poison overshadows the poetry. The strength and popularity of Wallace's painting became largely responsible for the long-perpetuated myth of the tortured artist and the deeply ingrained belief that artists must suffer for their art. Henry Wallace's painting swore in the marriage of poetry and melancholy, a reputation that is perpetuated to this day. Though undoubtedly the most famous, Wallace's Chatterton is by no means the first. Chatterton had been the subject of illustrations almost immediately following his death, and had even been emblazoned on a handkerchief. An entire industry grew around his fate, and it is certain that Wallace will have seen previous versions. Behind the creation of Wallace's Chatterton painting is another story, and another scandal. The model who posed for the picture is the poet George Meredith, who was a friend of Henry Wallace. Unbeknownst to Meredith at the time, Wallace was having an affair with his wife, Mary Ellen Meredith, who was the daughter of Thomas Love Peacock. She had also posed for Wallace. Not long after the unveiling of the painting, Wallace and Mary eloped, and although the relationship was short-lived, they had a son together. After the runaway success of The Death of Chatterton, Wallace himself fell into obscurity. This may have been due in part to George Meredith's attempt to limit knowledge of the affair with Mary. But Wallace had also switched from oil to watercolours, which proved less popular. He ended up pursuing other interests as a collector, scholar, and art dealer. Wallace was well-travelled and published widely on Italian and Islamic pottery, and he became instrumental in the formation of the Islamic ceramic collection at the V&A. Chatterton remains the pinnacle of Wallace's career. As stunning and as unforgettable as it is, it made Chatterton famous for all the wrong reasons, and created an afterlife that has haunted poets and artists ever since.